All right, be opening back up to the book of Ruth. We are back in this wonderful little book this morning. Brian finished up chapter 1 last week, and we will finish up chapter 2 today. It will be a little lengthy, but there's not really a good place to stop in the middle of this chapter, and so we're going to do our best to move through it and pray the Lord's blessings on it. Now, despite and because of how difficult life can be at times, and in the face of great wickedness, we can often be faced with moments where we can choose to have great courage and or to show great mercy and kindness. During those moments, we can either shrink away and follow the world, or we can stand firm and give the world examples of the heart of Christ. We can be intentional in our faith and in our purpose. There are a few chapters in Scripture, really, apart from the life of Christ, that we get a better picture and example of courage and grace in the face of trials and evil than the chapter before us this morning, and in the lives of Ruth and Boaz. These are two real people. Let's not forget that. Two real people that lived real lives. This is not a fairy tale. This is not some made-up story. This is the story of two real people living lives much the way we are today. But when presented with challenges and opportunity, they both respond intentionally with the heart and strength of Christ. The title of my sermon this morning is Intentional Godliness. Intentional Godliness. Let's read chapter 2. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. We'll stop there for the moment. Chapter 1 ended setting the stage, really, for chapter 2. If you read back with me in the last part of verse 22, we read, "And they came to Bethlehem," they being Naomi and Ruth, "they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest." Now, just as a reminder of the position that Naomi and Ruth found themselves in during this time, as they came into Bethlehem, they were two female widows. Two female widows who had no sons. They were by themselves. Women during this time had very few rights, as we have talked about and as we know. And they could just not go get a job. It wasn't like they could go down to the local store and get a job, or they could go to school and try to get a degree and get a job. That was not available to them. It was very difficult for them to provide for themselves, to even provide simple necessities for themselves. If that wasn't difficult enough, Naomi was likely an elderly woman by this time who was very limited physically in what she could do because of her age. Ruth was a foreign woman from the country of Moab who the Israelites hated. The likelihood of Ruth finding favor from an Israelite was very slim. This is a very prominent point that we will be reminded of several times in this book and in this chapter. Ruth is most often referred to as Ruth the Moabite. Now, it's obvious Ruth was from Moab and that she was a Moabite. She was a foreigner. But the author is intentional on reminding us of that because of the difficulties that presented Ruth and Naomi as they came back to Israel and settled back in Bethlehem. As the scene for chapter 2 opens, though, our attention is drawn really away from Naomi and Ruth and to this third and final prominent figure or prominent character in the book of Ruth. Brian mentioned this last week, and I think it's important to mention again, we should really do our best to immerse ourselves in this story as if we're reading it for the first time or hearing it for the first time. Now, I dare say most of us have read this book in its entirety on several occasions. We know the ending. But if we don't try and hear this in the shoes of Naomi and in the shoes of Ruth and the shoes of Boaz, we don't try to hear it as if this is the first time that we're hearing it, then honestly, we're missing a lot. Try to put yourself in their shoes. As they are in the moment, in this moment, in chapter 2, not by the end of the book, but as they are in this moment. If you were reading this for the first time, then you'd have no idea who Boaz was as he's being introduced. You might have some guesses, and you'd know that he was going to play an important part or an important role moving forward, but you'd still be unsure of what that role is. And that's where we're at here in chapter 2. Now, Naomi is aware of who Boaz is. She knew who he was as she moved back. But even though we are introduced to him here in verse 1, it has not crossed Naomi's mind that Boaz will play any part in hers or Ruth's life now that they're back in Bethlehem. Yet we are told that Boaz was a close relative of her husband and from the clan of Elimelech. We aren't told how close of a relative Boaz is, but we're just told he is a close relative. The author tells us that he was a worthy man, or literally a man of valor. Now this term, this worthy man or man of valor, is a term that is often used in Hebrew in several different ways. Most often it's used to describe a man of courage or a man of valor in war, a soldier, a courageous soldier. But it also has been used to describe a man of great social standing or a man of substance and great wealth. And it's also been used to refer to a person of great moral substance. And the last two there are likely the meaning that is intended here for Boaz. And that we'll see that as we work through this chapter and through this book. Boaz was certainly a man of wealth and of social standing, but he was a man of immense moral substance as well. Boaz's name means, in the strength of Yahweh, I will place my trust or rejoice. No other person in the Old Testament has this name, but it is interesting, according to 1 Kings chapter 7, 21, one of the two pillars in front of Solomon's temple is named Boaz. That name is fitting for this man, as his name alludes to Yahweh, who sustains the world by his strength, and at times he does so through agents like Boaz, as we will see in this book. Now, verse 1 is all we get about Boaz for now, just as an introduction for us to tuck away as we continue to read through this chapter and through this book. Verse 2 puts our attention directly back on Ruth and on Naomi. Now, as we finished up chapter 1, we were reminded that God had remembered His people and He had ended their famine, right? He had brought food back into the land of Israel or of Judah. But these two widows were without men to work fields for them and to provide food for them. Food would have had to come some way, though. They still had to eat. So Ruth, the Moabite, as we're told here, went to her mother-in-law and asked her blessing to go and glean in the fields. Now, after showing herself to be a woman of loyalty and selflessness and courage last chapter, by choosing Naomi and choosing to go to Israel, instead of going back to her family and going back to the land of Moab, Ruth now shows herself to be a woman of action. They had made this trip back to Bethlehem, and she was not going to just sit around and wait for pity or wait for them to starve to death. She was going to do something to help Naomi and help herself and to go out and provide for them. Now, God had established a system in the law for the Israelites which provided for the less fortunate, specifically for those who were widowed, who were orphaned, or for foreigners, because they had no land rights. Now, according to Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 19 through 21, Israelites were commanded this: when you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the sojourner, for the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. And when you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterward. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. This was in the law for the Israelites. This was a command for all Israelites, all landowners, for them to leave behind certain parts of their crops for the needy, specifically, the orphans, the widows, and the sojourners or the foreigners to be able to provide themselves with food. This system was set up in this manner for the benefit of both the needy and really for the landowners. This allowed those in need of food and without a direct way of providing and taking care of themselves to be able to provide and take care of themselves and to be able to get food. But this was also a requirement for them to make an effort to provide for themselves. While there are certainly cases where people are unable to work and adequately provide for themselves, even the most basic necessities such as food, God intended for man to work. Sin and the fall made this difficult and tiresome, but even in the creation, Adam and Eve were tasked to have dominion and care over God's creation, which implied a manner of work, a manner of doing that the Lord had made them for. We honor and glorify God when we work. Landowners who had these crops were required to do this in order to show their care for the needy. This was sacrifice that they were required to make in order, again, to help the needy. This was for their benefit. This showed their care. It showed a heart of God and how they lived their lives and what they were able to do for those in need around them. We must remember this, though, as we see Ruth about to go out and attempt to find fields to glean food for her and Naomi. They were living in the time of the judges, right? There was no king to enforce the law, and there was little leadership otherwise for years. That is why the last verse of Judges, as we went over a couple of weeks ago and then last week again, tells us that men did only what was right in their own eyes. If you've read or studied through Judges, then you know that what was right in most men's eyes during that time was evil. It was selfishness. And as we continue to read this chapter, we will see that this evil was often meant to harm someone like Ruth. Someone in need, someone not capable of defending themselves or less capable of defending themselves. As it does most often, evil preys on the weak who have a difficult time defending themselves. So when Ruth asked Naomi to go and glean from the fields, she was being courageous, really. This was a courageous request, a courageous action on her part. And it was selfless. She continues her courageousness and her selflessness from chapter 1 to chapter 2. She knows, or has to know, that she will be at risk by doing this. She also understood that she would be at the mercy of any landowner that she went out to attempt to glean from their field from. Now, although this was the law, again, most people weren't following the law. So there was no guarantee that Ruth would be able to find any field to glean from, to get any type of food. Even more glaring, as we are reminded in this verse, in verse 2, Ruth was a Moabite. Jews were very hostile toward those from another race, so Ruth knew she would need the grace and kindness of anybody that owned land if she were to find food for her and Naomi. Yet Ruth would not let her status as a foreigner in Israel keep her from trying to do what was needed to be done. Ruth is the shining example, really, of a person who didn't let her circumstances control her and to trust in God to bless her despite the circumstances that she was faced with. In verse 2 we read, and she said, "Go, my daughter," Naomi talking to Ruth in verse 3. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather from the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." So Ruth came to Naomi, asked her blessing to go out and to glean from the fields. Naomi lovingly sends her out, and immediately we're told that she comes upon the field of Boaz, this man that we were introduced to in verse 1 and really had no idea as we read through the book what that purpose was. Scripture states that she happened to come to the field of Boaz. That's the way it's put. That's the way the author writes it. The Hebrew here actually speaks of chance. Like this was a chance happening, or this was just coincidence. It actually speaks of a double chance. Kind of like it happened to happen, if that makes sense. Now, let me be clear. The author is not saying, they're not meaning that Ruth found the field of Boaz by a matter of chance, or a matter of luck, or a matter of Ruth's just going out and doing. Just as today, at this time, and I'm sure at the time when the author wrote this, people were quick to lose sight of the sovereignty of God and how He guides all things. The author really here is just he's being sarcastic and drawing attention to the fact that there's nothing that happens by accident. There's nothing that happens out of the control of God. It might be an accident in our view, but there are no accidents from God. The author draws attention to this fact even more there in verse 3 by declaring, "Behold," as in, "Oh, behold, here is the field of Boaz," or "Boaz came from Bethlehem." The owner of the field, or a field, was not there every day. And he certainly wouldn't have been there if he had other fields, or wouldn't have been there every day if he had other fields to tend to or to check on and to go to, which was likely the case for Boaz as a wealthy man. But on this day, and by the providence of God, Ruth finds herself in the field of Boaz, and Boaz finds himself coming from Bethlehem to tend his field and to see about his field. This is the first time that Boaz speaks in this book, or he acts in this book, and he gives us a really wonderful first impression, doesn't he? In this brief exchange with his workers, we see a godly man who has set the stage for a godly work environment for his servants. Even though this is Israel, many other gods were being worshipped during the time of the judges. They constantly went after false gods, but not Boaz. He is clear here that Yahweh was who he served, and he invokes his name and his greeting as he talks to his servants, as he talks to his reapers. Now this greeting might seem simple in a way, but it shows both his graciousness towards his servants, and it also shows that God was on the forefront of his mind. As John Piper states, if you want to know a man's relation to God, it helps to find out how far God has saturated him down to the detail of his everyday life. Evidently, Boaz was such a God-saturated man that his farming business and his relationships to his employees was shot through with God. He greeted them with God. Not only did Boaz greet them with God, but they greeted him back with God, right? When godly bosses set a godly environment for their employees, then that sets the tone for their work environment. And often, it is reciprocated. Whether you're a boss, though, or whether you're just an employee, if you are living intentional, godly lives for people around you, you are setting the tone for a godly environment. Upon setting his eyes on the field, though, his attention is immediately drawn to Ruth. We aren't told whether there were any other needy men or women trying to glean from his field, but even if there were, Boaz would have likely had a pretty good idea of who most of the poor and needy were in his area or in Bethlehem at this time, and who had been taking advantage of his field in the past and would have been gleaning from his field. So, as he comes back from Bethlehem and he greets and then he begins to look on the field, Ruth would have stood out. There's no question about that. A young Moabite woman would have certainly been something that would have drawn his attention, because she would have not been there before, he would have not seen her before, and she would have not been someone that he would have expected to be in his field. It appears that he assumes she was already attached to someone else by his question here. He says, "Whose young woman is this?" Now, that could be he thought maybe she was already attached as in a marriage, or more specifically, probably, he thought maybe she was attached to somebody else as this was a servant of somebody else that was sent out to do this work. And he is inquiring of who she is and what she's doing there. He's certainly not aware of who she is by appearance alone. Now, we will find out here in a moment that he knows who she is, but he's never seen her before. His servant here, likely the foreman of the field, answered him and told him who she was. He also told Boaz of the exchange that he'd had with Ruth when she'd come into the field that morning. even though it was not required of Ruth to ask permission, since again, the law required that the reapers allow someone like Ruth to glean, she had still done so in a show of humility and respect. She came in showing humility, showing respect for the reapers, for the owners of the field, and requested to be able to reap. The foreman continued on and told Boaz that once Ruth began to glean, she did from early morning until now. We aren't told exactly when now is, but it's some time, obviously, from early morning, and had only stopped to take a short rest. Ruth's work ethic here had clearly made an impression on this man. And as Boaz is asking about her, this is one of the main things he brings out to Boaz. She's been working since the morning, and she's barely taken a stop. She's barely taken a rest, just a short rest. Let us take note of that as well here. People pay attention to us and how we work and how we how our work ethic is. And how we work reflects not only what kind of person we are, but also how people view God if they know that we are professing believers. After hearing this, Boaz speaks to Ruth in verse 8. He says, "Then Boaz said to Ruth, 'Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn.' Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?' But Boaz answered her, 'All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge.' Then she said, 'I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants.'" So after hearing this report of Ruth, Boaz obviously calls Ruth to him, or goes to Ruth and speaks to her. And to begin with, we should see how he addresses her, really. He calls her his daughter. He refers to her as "my daughter." And that's exactly the way that Naomi had referred to her, right? As her daughter. Now, Naomi, this was her daughter. It was her daughter-in-law. And Boaz was obviously not her father. But by saying this to her, we see really how Boaz viewed her at this time. I know, again, because we know the end of the story, it's easy to assume that Boaz had other intentions, or he viewed her in a different way really than what he did at this point. But there's really no indication that he viewed her as anybody else other than a young widow woman in need of help, and Naomi's daughter-in-law. The kindness he will show her as we work through this chapter is not out of attraction to her or an attempt to entice her. It is from a heart which wanted to provide for her and for Naomi, two widows who were his close family. Again, he, by this point, when he talks to her, he knows who she is. He knows that she is part of his family through Naomi. He knows, obviously, who Naomi is. Ruth may not have known, and she will not know until the end of this chapter, but Boaz knew. Here we see, again, more about the man of Boaz in this interaction. Boaz was a man guided by the law of God, but he was also a man led by the Spirit of God. His attitude to Ruth here was the embodiment of how God intended the law to be lived out. It was a strict set of rules and a strict set of laws. There's no doubt about that. But God wanted the Israelites to live the law with a heart set on mercy and love, because that is the heart of God. Boaz goes above and beyond the call of the law here, and he tells her not to go to another field, to stay close to his female reapers. He goes on to tell her that he had commanded the young men in the field not to touch her. Now, this is the first time we really see the dangers that Ruth potentially faced when she had gone out in that morning to glean in the fields. Again, this was the time of the judges. This was a godless and wicked society that abounded during that time. It seems that it was common for male workers in the fields to harass and take advantage of the women who went to the fields to glean. Boaz says that he'd already told his workers not to do this. Probably had already told them prior to knowing about Ruth. This is something that he had laid down as law in his fields. They were not to do that in his fields. And he assures her that this will not take place to her with her, and that she'll be safe in his field. So stay there and glean in his field. Finally, he tells her to drink water that the male reapers had drawn. And again, this is something that would have been highly unusual for him to have offered to Ruth. Normally, and as custom would have dictated, foreigners would have been the one that would have drawn water for Israelites. And even more than that, women would have been the one that would have drawn water for men. So Ruth being a woman and being a foreigner, the idea of her having water drawn from her and her drinking from the same pail or the same place as the men who had drawn this water was really highly unusual and probably even unthinkable. But Boaz, as the owner of the field and as the owner of these servants, made clear that she was to be able to do that. For her sake, he made it possible for her to have water available to her at all times whenever she was at work there in his field. Now, this whole exchange really is highly unusual and would have been an extraordinary measure of grace to Ruth. Ruth knows that. She realizes that. And so after hearing this from Boaz, hearing this this conversation and this grace coming from Boaz, she immediately falls to the ground and she thanks him in humility. She cannot believe that Boaz has been so kind to her. She is so struck that she asks Boaz, "Why are you being kind? Why have you shown favor to me or found favor to me?" He informs Ruth that he had been told all that she had done for Naomi. Ruth's sacrifice and selflessness in leaving everything she'd known so that she could take care of Naomi and be with her had made an impression on the people of Bethlehem by this point. They hadn't been in Bethlehem that long because they came into Bethlehem at the time when the harvest had begun and were led to believe that Ruth is going out at that time, that they wouldn't have been able to last without food for very long had she not done that. So she's going out pretty soon after she gets there, and word of who she is and what she had done for Naomi had already spread in Bethlehem and had already made a good name for her. She'd begun to gain respect even as a Moabite in Israel. If you remember in the introduction, I told you that the Jews historically saw Ruth as the embodiment or the picture of the godly woman in Proverbs 31, right? Well, this is an example of one reason why. But how in Proverbs 31, if you recall, a town or a community would respect the husband, would gain respect for a husband of that woman because of the respect they had for that woman. Because of the type of woman that the Proverbs 31 woman is or was, any husband of hers would gain respect in the town or the community they lived in. Although Ruth didn't have a husband at this time, if she were to marry, the man she married would have gained a measure of respect purely because of the respect and admiration that Ruth had already gained in that area because of the sacrifice she had made for Naomi. Then verse 12 is kind of a pivotal verse in this chapter and really in this book. Verse 12 tells us, "The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Boaz prays here that God would repay Ruth for her kindness to Naomi. Specifically, that God, the God of Israel, would take her under his wings. The Hebrew word for wing here can also be translated corner of a garment. That will be significant as we work through this book, and it will be significant where Boaz is concerned and where Ruth is concerned. But this is covenant language, language used to speak of God's care and protection for his people. Jesus spoke of this during his ministry, but there he spoke of it in lament, right? As he spoke of Israel and specifically Jerusalem and how they had rejected him, he stated that he would have taken them under his wings as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, but they were not willing, right? But Jesus was willing to do that for his people, and that care for his people in such a way. Boaz knows that Ruth had left Moab, and she left all of her gods behind there, and she followed the God of Naomi, the God of Israel. He prays here for her to be given the same blessings promised to the Israelites by God, for her to be taken under the wings of Yahweh. This prayer specifies that Yahweh is the God under whose wings Ruth is to seek and has sought refuge and asylum here. And later we will see that Boaz will actually become an answer to his very own prayer. Now Ruth replies in verse 13 again in humility. And this is all we see in the life of Ruth. And the picture of Ruth is just, she is a woman of action. She is a woman of courage and of selflessness. But she is a woman of humility as well. Here she replies and refers to herself as a servant of Boaz. Now, a servant, the servant specifically that she refers to here would have been the servant on the lowest order or the lowest rung of the social ladder. A similar statement was made by Abigail after David had proposed marriage to her in 1 Samuel chapter 25. And it's meant to show gratefulness. It's meant to show humility for what is being done for that person, and specifically for Ruth here. Ruth is amazed here that neither differences in race nor class have kept Boaz from showing her great compassion, and she wants to be certain that Boaz knows that she understands that and that she is grateful for that. Verse 14, "And at mealtime Boaz said to her, 'Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine.' So she sat beside the reapers and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean and do not rebuke her.'" We can assume after this conversation that Ruth went on back. She went back to the field and began to work for a period of time until this mealtime. And I can picture the scene here really as we work through this. As Boaz begins the day seeing Ruth and finding out who she is, hearing the report of Ruth, and then talking to her, and then watching her go back out to the field and seeing for himself the type of work ethic that she provides, the type of woman that she is, just in the way she carries herself and in the conversation that he's had for. And as this unfolds, again, this was not out of a desire to have a relationship with her, but to see for himself what type of woman she is and what type of woman he'd heard about and he just granted that type of favor on. As he watches her relentless hard work, his respect grows. And once it came time to eat, he extended an invitation for Ruth to come and eat with him and his servants. Again, highly unusual. This is just another next example of how Boaz is going beyond the requirements of the law to be kind to Ruth. This was not a requirement of the law at all. All they had to do was leave some of the what had fallen on the ground behind and let them pick it up. And there was no requirement they have any relationship with them, any conversation with them, provide food for them, anything like that. So Boaz is showing again the type of man he is and by going above and beyond the law and being kind to Ruth. And this is again another example of how Ruth's humility and work ethic is blessed by God. A poor widow gleaning in the field would never have been asked to join the house and the house servants for a meal, yet Ruth was. Boaz also shows himself to be a man of humility here, and not one that made it obvious that he was superior to his servants because he sat down to eat with them. He didn't separate himself from them. He didn't put them in another place and eat different food or eat a different place. He sat down with them as if he were one of them. Ruth not only ate, but until she was satisfied, which again was an uncommon thing for the poor and needy during this time. It's still uncommon today for the poor and needy, but we don't know what it's like to eat we know what it's like to eat until we're completely satisfied. We are fully aware of as people who have plenty of what it's like to eat until we're completely satisfied. That's how we eat. But at this time, people didn't know that very often, of what it meant to eat until they were satisfied, especially someone in Ruth's situation. Unfortunately, we throw away more food today than what they likely ate in an entire day. Once she was at this point, once she was eating, she finished her food and there was even some left over. So she ate to complete satisfaction and then had food even left over. I couldn't help but think of Jesus here as he fed the hungry multitudes on two occasions and how they ate until they were satisfied and then they left and there were baskets left over from what he'd provided. They depended on Christ for food and he provided for them. Boaz exhibited the heart of Christ here and he did the same for Ruth. He provided food for her. In Deuteronomy 10, chapter 10, verses 17 through 9, we read, "For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, mighty, and awesome God who shows no partiality and accepts no bribes. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow and loves the sojourner, giving him food and clothing. This is God's heart." That verse and Boaz's example here is God's heart. And this is how he intended for the Israelites to live their lives out and for them to have the same heart. In verse 18 of Deuteronomy chapter 10, God goes on to say and tell them that by commanding them to do this, he's commanding them to love the sojourner, therefore, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. Boaz exhibited this love and command for Ruth and really for Naomi in providing this food. He demonstrated that he not only loved God, but that he also loved the foreigner and that he loved the widow as God himself does. And note also that when he showed this love, it wasn't in some religious setting, but rather it was just in his daily work routine. We can find ourselves being more in tune with God and having the heart of God during worship on Sunday or Wednesday, but do we find ourselves in tune during the week as we go to work and as we carry out our normal routine? Are we saturated with God in a way that it comes out in all that we do, just as Boaz was here? Then in a final act of grace toward Ruth, before she goes back out to glean again, Boaz tells his workers to go way above and beyond the call of the law. They were to pull out from the actual bundles that they had gathered, they had collected, and cut them for her to glean and toss them onto the ground. This was, again, certainly not required by the law, as the law only required the owner to leave part of the sheaves that had fallen on the ground as they were gleaning. Here, Boaz demands they actually cut off some of the stalks they were harvesting and leave them on the ground for Ruth to pick up. Then in verse 17, we read, "So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, 'Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you.' So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz.' And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'May he be blessed by the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead.' Naomi also said to her, 'The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers.' And Ruth the Moabite said, 'Besides, he said to me, you shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.' And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'Is it good, my daughter, that you go? It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted.' So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law." Ruth, in verse 17, we're told that Ruth gleaned that day until evening in the field of Boaz. She worked from dusk till dawn, basically, and she was able to gather an ephah of barley. Now, to us, that measurement doesn't really mean much because we have no idea what an ephah is. We don't measure in ephahs. But from what I was able to read and find out, that was about 30 to 40 pounds of barley. She was carrying a sack or however she was carrying it, about 30 or 40 pounds of barley. To put some perspective on that, the average amount needed to feed a person daily during this time was about 1 liter of barley. This ephah was equivalent to anywhere between 10 to 20 liters of barley. So in one day, just this one day, Ruth had threshed enough barley to last both the women, perhaps up to even a week and a half. We know from verse 23 here that Ruth harvested barley and wheat for the entire season as well. Those two harvest seasons roughly took about 2 months. This would have been roughly 2 months of harvest. So if you do the math and add what Ruth collected this day and assume that's what she collected on average each day, then over these next 2 months, Ruth would have threshed and collected roughly enough wheat and barley to last her and Naomi for about a year, or at least until the next harvest season. So Boaz had truly provided for them for the entire year. He provided food for them, and he'd fulfilled his duty under the law as a redeemer at this point. And he intended to do that. Upon returning home, Naomi comes in, or Ruth comes in lugging this 40-pound bag of barley and extra food from the meal that she'd had there at her time with Boaz. And we can see Naomi is just shocked. She's shocked at what she sees here. I don't know if she expected Ruth to have gotten any type of food, but especially to come home with this amount and extra food that she'd eaten herself, she's shocked. And she asks, who had shown her so much kindness? Kindness. So Ruth tells her it was a man by the name of Boaz. Ruth still has no idea at this point that this is a close kin or a close family member of Naomi. Naomi hears this and she prays blessing on Boaz for such kindness. She recognizes God's hand at work here as well, and she realizes that Boaz's kindness was not just on her and on Ruth, but it was on behalf of her husband and her son. She states that, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." We're introduced here to the kinsman redeemer for the first time in the book. Not only do we see this term here, but according to Daniel Block, the statement, "the living and the dead," anticipates future developments and functions as a provider representing the family as a whole. So Naomi here, in stating this, she realizes that Boaz has represented to her and to Ruth that he plans to care for her and her family as moving forward, and not just now, but in the future. Now, we don't know for sure at this point if Naomi is hoping for more from Boaz, especially a romantic relationship with Naomi, and that he will do more. But it certainly puts the thought in our heads, right, as we read through this. Naomi seems excited, and for good reason, and she's certain that at the very least, Boaz intends to care for their physical needs. He intends to provide food for them. This foreshadows the rest of the book, really, as we will soon see Naomi be a catalyst for Boaz and Ruth's future and their relationship. And Boaz's actions here of going above and beyond the letter of the law are also foreshadowed as his future actions as the kinsman redeemer. Naomi gives her blessing again for Ruth to glean in Boaz's field from here on, and Ruth does so for the remainder of the barley and the wheat season. As I said, those two harvests would have taken roughly 2 months. And so as we end this chapter, we end it roughly 2 months after Ruth's initial encounter with Boaz, and we aren't told really anything else between the two of them, right? We just know that she gleaned from the field for the following 2 months. Honestly, neither Ruth nor Boaz seem to be expecting or pursuing any type of romantic relationship at this time. Again, as Block states, Ruth seemed oblivious to potential marital implications of this relationship at this point. What mattered to her was the women's long-range economic well-being. Ruth would not have dreamed that someone like Boaz, someone in his status and of his wealth, would marry a foreigner like herself. It's obviously possible and likely that their affection and respect for each other grew during that those two months. And that might tie into the hope that Naomi might have had at this point, this initial conversation and finding out that Boaz had provided. But Boaz fails to act on any of that at this point. And through the 2 months of harvest, there's no action on that end. This chapter, really, it gives us a lot to chew on. It's a lot to go through, and it's a lot for us to chew on. In this chapter, we've seen courage, we've seen grace, we've seen mercy, we've seen humility, we've seen righteousness from a man and woman despite their circumstances and despite the wicked society around them. In Ruth, we get an example of perseverance. We get an example of faith. We live in a time where everyone walks around as a victim. Everyone walks around demanding to be treated as a victim. Ruth has been allowed to experience a very difficult situation. Her circumstances at this point were dire. Yet she persevered and she took action. And even though the law of the land she lived in demanded that she be given something, she didn't demand it. She just went and worked. She just exhibited humility and a willingness to earn everything that she got. Ruth is a woman worthy of following, not only for you ladies, but also for us men. Boaz gives us a crystal clear picture of a man who didn't just follow a list of religious rules. No, he was a man who lived them out because they were ingrained in his heart. He exhibited true righteousness. True righteousness is not demonstrated by lofty or orthodox creedal statements or a strict set of rules. It is demonstrated in action that honors God and serves the interests of the needy. James is clear about that, right? When he wrote, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world." Christ gave us the same description in greater detail in Matthew 25 when he stated, "Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Yes, we need to know God's Word. We need to model our lives according to what He's commanded. There are clearly right and wrong things for us to do, both as individuals and as a church. But if our worship and our religion is just set on following a set of rules and just getting by that way, then we've missed the heart of God. Our love to others, especially the needy and the less fortunate, is a clear indication of whether our hearts are in line with God's or not. The opening scene in this book has placed doubt on the royal line, but the second act here, the second chapter, it shines a ray of hope for us. Ruth went out looking for grace as we began this chapter, and with Israel being such a wicked place, it would have taken the hand of God for her to find it. By embodying the grace that Ruth had sought for hearers of this, Boaz also raises hope for the royal line. Finally, in both Ruth and Boaz, we see a picture of what is known of chesed in Hebrew. It's a common idea and thought through this book. It is a word which no English word can fully capture. It is a concept that describes a relationship, and it carries with it the idea of covenant loyalty, faithfulness, kindness, goodness, mercy, love, and compassion. It is a word or a concept that requires action. And it generally refers to an act performed for the benefit of a person in real or desperate need. This act is performed because of a deep and enduring commitment between the parties that are concerned. It is performed by a stronger being on behalf of a weaker being, one capable of performing an act that the weaker one cannot. Ruth displayed this when she went out to glean on behalf of Naomi. And Boaz displayed it in providing for Ruth in his field. But it is a characteristic of God in His covenantal relationship with His people. Even in our everyday life, God is constantly displaying this type of action toward us, as there is nothing we can do without His grace. Yet He has most prominently displayed it in sending Jesus to the cross and raising Him on the third day. In that, God was the actor. And He provided a love, a faithfulness, a kindness, a goodness, a mercy, a love, and a compassion for a people that were entirely unable to provide it for themselves. A people in desperate need, because we were destined for eternal damnation apart from Him. That is the kind of God that we serve. Let us be thankful to serve such a God, and let us look for ways that we ourselves can live out that kind of love and that kind of compassion for others. Let us live our lives with intent on picturing God and picturing God's holiness for others. Everyone stand with me.